Welcome to episode 49 of the Cycling Europe podcast. I'm going to be brutally honest. A couple of weeks ago, I was trying to set up an interview with various people and it came to nothing. Well, nothing so far. Hopefully it will come to something when I actually managed to track down the people I was trying to track down. And I was thinking, oh my goodness, I'm stuck for an interviewee. Episode number 49 might be somewhere off in the distant future. But then I was on Facebook. I think I was on the Facebook page of the Cycle Touring Festival. And the one and only Rob Ainslie, who has appeared on this podcast previously, he had posted some music, and it was a beautiful piece of music, and it's the music that you've just heard, and we're going to hear more of it later. There's a story behind the music, and I thought, hang on a second, Rob, he's got plenty of stories to tell about cycling in Europe. He's just come back from Slovakia. I was reading and watching all his pictures about Slovakia, so I contacted him, and I said, Rob, would you mind just popping on the podcast to speak about the music, envisaging a, I don't know, 3-4 minute chat with him about the music? And then I thought, hang on a second, this could be the solution to the episode 49 problem of not having a guest. It would be to talk to Rob. And Rob, who is looking at me now through the wonders of Zoom, he's kind of almost frozen. He has said yes, and he is going to be the star of this show. Basically, I haven't got a clue what he's about to say. I haven't written any questions down. I usually prepare these things with an inch of their life, but this one I haven't. So we're going to start talking about Slovakia. We may veer off in a different direction. We need to talk about the music, and I think there's a connection there with Amsterdam. We might make reference to my kind of tweaked trip around the Baltic, which, if you've been following the website, has been tweaked rather significantly to now, well, go nowhere near the Baltic. We'll come back to that later, because I dare say Rob has visited or cycled along bits and pieces of France that I am probably going to go on. But to stop me talking, Rob, could you in 30 seconds introduce yourself?
Hello, my name's Rob Ainslie. I'm a cycling writer and I'm collecting international end-to-ends. It started with Land's End John O'Groats in 1997 and I enjoyed that a lot. And I thought, well, what can I do next? So I did Cape Roth to Dover, and then I did the Irish end-to-end, and whenever I can, I've been collecting them ever since. So at last, after a couple of years not travelling abroad for obvious reasons, I managed to get to Slovakia about 3 weeks ago and did the Slovakian end-to-end. I've been through the country before and really liked it, and I thought it'd be nice to see the whole place from one side to the other. So that's what I did.
Right, Slovakia end to end. Now, I've got a map of Slovakia in front of me. I mean, you could have taken the easy option and gone north-south. I'm assuming you went east-west or west-east.
Yeah, so I went west-east, and the furthest point west is a little village called Zahorská Ves, which is on the border with Austria. And the furthest point east is a little village called Nová Sedlica, which is actually on the Ukrainian border. And it's about 450 miles. And Slovakia and the other Eastern European countries, they've always fascinated me, because growing up in the 60s, as I did, I don't know if you remember looking at road atlases, road atlas of Europe in the 70s, and it would have all the countries of Europe, but there was the Iron Curtain going down the middle of Europe. And to the left was all the countries of Western Europe, which were full of cities and roads and things. And on the right-hand side of the Iron Curtain, it was just all white. And there was maybe just a few roads joining places like Minsk and Warsaw. And you thought, my goodness, there's nothing there. And then, of course, the Iron Curtain came down and we could travel to these places. And you found, actually, there was plenty there. They were like real countries with real people. And they had like bars and restaurants and historic centres. And so I've always had this fascination for these places. And I've always enjoyed cycling. I did the Polish end-to-end a couple of years ago, really enjoyed that. And so Slovakia was next on the list. And And I also enjoy that challenge of going through a place where the language is unfamiliar. And that's always fun, just trying to get by in something that, you know, you haven't grown up with. But Slovakia was great. Quite a quiet country, fairly quiet, modest people, but scenically rewarding. A lot of quiet roads, some surprisingly good bike paths. They're putting in some cycle infrastructure. And when they do it pretty well. It's wide, smooth, continuous bike paths. They're still installing it, so it's a work in progress. But quite often I was pleasantly surprised to find this 20-mile long bike path alongside a river with the epic High Tatra Mountains in the background. And there were some very, very scenic places.
We'll talk clearly about Slovakia in a few minutes, but you have appeared on the podcast before. I can't remember what episode it was, but we cycled together for 2 days in the Yorkshire Dales. We camped overnight somewhere.
Bolton Abbey, I think, just near Bolton Abbey.
That's right. And then the following night in that kind of rudimentary place a bit further north.
Yes, just outside Hawes, Hardraw Force, just next to Hardraw Force.
We recorded a really fun chat in the pub in Hawes. Was it Hawes, I think?
Yes.
Where we talked about, because the whole podcast, again, I should really remember what episode it was, but the premise of that podcast episode was that people coming up with interesting ideas for cycle tours. And one person I remember from that particular episode was a chap called James, who was a fan of David. Bowie?
David Bowie, I think. Yeah.
David Bowie.
So he'd sort of visited places to do with David Bowie's recording career in Berlin and places like that.
Yeah, he started in, I think, Ibiza, ended up in...
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
In fact, Ibiza to the Norfolk Broads, was that?
That was it. Ibiza to the Norfolk Broads.
Via Moscow. And we did have an interesting chat about some interesting points, the motivations for going on these bizarre trips and why you would choose to do various things. We veered off in the direction of places that rhyme. And I always remember you saying Barmouth to Yarmouth.
I went through a phase about 10 years ago of finding coast to coasts that rhyme. So I'd done the regular coast to coasts, the Way of the Roses, the C2C, the Reavers Route, Hadrian's and so on. And I wanted to come up with some more coast to coasts. And I had this idea of places that rhyme. So it started with Barmouth to Yarmouth. And then went on with Lynmouth to Tynmouth, Poole to Goole, Barrow to Jarrow, Dunbar to Stranraer. And then I ran out of places that rhymed. And actually, since I saw you, since we had our very pleasant beers in that pub, which was, I think, the first pub I'd been since lockdown. So I hadn't been in a pub for like 6 months, and it felt this really strange experience. But since then, I've done another couple of rides. One in Yorkshire that I did last year was from it was a kind of end-to-end of Yorkshire, but it was from the first place alphabetically to the last place alphabetically. And the first place alphabetically in Yorkshire is Abbeydale, which is a suburb of Sheffield. And actually quite interesting, there's lots of industrial heritage there. And it was the site of perhaps the first steel factories in Sheffield. And it's also got a brewery. And that was right down at the south end of Yorkshire. So that made an appropriate place to start. And I finished at the omega of the Yorkshire Gazetteer, which is a place called Zebra Hill, which fascinated me because nobody knows why it's called Zebra Hill. Now, zebras are clearly not a native species to Yorkshire, but it made for a very interesting place to finish.
How did you find Zebra Hill in Yorkshire?
I did a search on various online gazetteers and there it was at the very bottom.
And where is it? Where is Zebra Hill?
Zebra Hill is about a little bit west of Richmond, a bit south of Pierce Bridge, so not far from Darlington, that kind of neck of the woods. And so that was very near the northern extreme of Yorkshire, so it made for this nice end-to-end, an A to Z that was also a south to north.
And how confident are you that you found? I'm trying to think. There's no Z, Z E zebra. There's no A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K?
Well,
there's no Zob Valley or...
It sort of depends. What do you mean by a place? Does it have to be a village? Does it have to be a place with a nameplate? Is it just somewhere on the Ordnance Survey map? I decided to go... There's actually a place called Zechariah Wood, which would come after Zebra Hill, but I decided that just wasn't as interesting as somewhere named after a stripy African plains and mountain.
And was it in Sheffield? Because it wouldn't have been, it wouldn't have been a very long ride if it was.
Well, no. There's a sort of a UK alternative, which would be Aaron's Hill in Godalming to Zouch in Nottingham. Not Ashby de la Zouch, but just Zouch, which I may get round to. But the Yorkshire one was great fun, and it was... I actually ended up writing a piece of music about Zebra Hill, imagining great herds of zebras kind of gracefully grazing and wandering across the Yorkshire Dales. So that's one of the pieces of music that it inspired.
Now, the reason I mentioned that many minutes ago was because I've done end-to-ends myself. I can see the aesthetic pleasure in going from one end of something to the other end of something. But I have to say, in my cases, they've kind of been points where you can't continue. You have embraced the end-to-end in terms of the frontiers between the boundaries between countries. What's the joy of the end to end?
It's like I say, it started off as Land's End John O'Groats, which is an obvious kind of you'll get your feet wet if you go any further. And then I did Ireland, which is Mizenhead to Malinhead, which again is a fairly obvious coastal journey. And for a time I did a few islands. I did Sri Lanka, I did Cuba, and it was quickly getting clear that I would, if I wanted to do lots of end-to-ends, I'd have to do places which weren't necessarily islands. So I did France, which actually was a coast-to-coast. It was Saint-Malo to Nice, in a book called France en Vélo by Hannah Reynolds. And then I did Spain, which again was a sort of coast-to-coast.
Sorry to be a pedant here, Rob. Saint-Malo to Nice is not end-to-end.
Well, the French have this concept called les flèches, don't they? The arrows, where you can sort of go across France in any direction, and it's called a flèche. Yeah, and it's Spain, which was Cadiz to Gijón. But yeah, then I was running out of places that you could start and end at a beach or a cliff.
Hang on, go back to les flèches. Tell me more about les flèches.
Well, this is only what I've been told by friends who've cycled around France, that there is this concept called, if you go from one, if you're essentially going across France in a constant direction, that counts as a flèche, an arrow.
Okay. So you weren't tempted to kind of start off in kind of Dunkirk, on just north of Dunkirk, and finish in Argelès?
Well, that would be a possibility. The reason I did that route was because it was in the book. In the book called France en Vélo. And so they had set it out as the route, which proved to be a really interesting way of seeing the range of French geology, of French villages, of having all different types of cheeses and cuisines and wine. And for me, the buzz of an end-to-end is that feeling of narrative. There's a clear beginning and a clear end, and there's a clear middle. And there's a feeling of a journey in all senses. And yeah, hopefully at the end you come back having learned something, you know, maybe about yourself as well as about the country. But I like that feeling of completeness, that you're not just seeing the honeypots and the nice places and the beautiful historic squares, but you're also cycling through the workaday towns and the humdrum villages. And I quite like that totality that cycle touring embraces. And for me, absolutely part of the buzz is, you know, maybe sitting and having a coffee or a beer or something in these out of the way towns where the locals are a bit puzzled that you're there, and they'll say, well, why have you come here? This is just a normal Polish town. Well, yeah, that's why I'm here, because it's a normal Polish town. And, you know, just as people who came to visit Britain, if all you do is visit the Tower of London and Shakespeare's Stratford and Jane Austen's Bath and the Edinburgh Golden Mile, well, yeah, you've seen some of Britain, but maybe to get that rounded sense of what Britain and the British are like, maybe you also have to spend a bit of time in Sunderland and Wolverhampton and Newport and Cumbernauld.
I'm completely with you there. I think that when I cycled across Europe back in 2010 for the first time, that for me was one of the real revelations, the fact that, you know, you, when you fly into a place, you fly to, say, Paris or Rome or Milan or wherever, you see a pretty limited version of the place that you're visiting. Whereas on a bike, you get this real proper 100% authentic cross-section of the entire country. And for me, that just really puts it into context. Yeah. I remember cycling across Rome back in 2010, and had been to Rome previously. And in my mind, I had this image of Rome as, you know, all the kind of stereotypical things, the you know, the Roman ruins, the big typewriter thing that's in the middle, and the, you know, all the cliched things, and then the Vatican, what have you. And then to cycle through it and just to cut through it like a knife through a cake was fascinating, because the northern stretches of Rome were very affluent. The southern bits were very deprived and, you know, quite run down. And I thought, yes, I actually understand Rome far better than I ever did when I just flew in, got in a taxi at the airport, was driven 150 kilometers an hour down that road to the center of Rome, and then just stayed there for a few days and then flew back home.
Yeah, when I went across Cuba, which was a fabulous ride, took me about 4 weeks, and I went through quite a few touristy places, went through Havana and Trinidad and so on. But the really rewarding parts for me were those cities and towns where really there were very few visitors, just the odd cycle tourist, really. And that's when I felt I was getting closest to, you know, seeing the real Cuba, being a traveler, not a tourist, all that sort of thing. And yeah, for me, it's that completeness. It's the fact that it's all continuous, that it's a joined up experience, and it's a fairly complete experience. And you're seeing all sides of a country and its different cultures and its different people.
So that's the beauty of end to ends. But okay, Rob, why Slovakia? Why did you choose Slovakia? I mean, for goodness sake, Ukraine, which has a border with Slovakia, is currently at war with Russia.
Yes, obviously the situation was a bit different when I started planning the Slovakia trip 3 years ago, but I'd been through before and I'd really enjoyed it.
Stop. 3 years ago?
That was when I first thought about going to Slovakia.
Right.
And started planning it, and then obviously the lockdowns came along.
Okay.
I had to put things on hold. Yeah. So I'd been to Slovakia before, and very much enjoyed the fact that the quality to price ratio for beer is probably one of the best in the world. There's probably only the Czech Republic can rival it. I mean, there's cheaper places for beer, Vietnam, for example. But when it comes to the quality as well, really the Czech Republic and Slovakia are very, very good options.
What, even better than Yorkshire?
Well, of course, that's a pretty tough act to follow. But most of the beer that you get in Slovakia is owned by very large breweries. But I found lots of small brew pubs, basically, which did their little sort of beer cellar things down in brick cellars, which did fabulous beers in places like Trenčín and Košice and Prešov. So that was one reason.
You basically went to Slovakia because you wanted cheap beer.
That was on the tick list. But also there's some pleasant historic places, the old town centres in places like Trenčín or Košice or Prešov are pleasant. And certainly out east, there's a lot of very individual things, such as the wooden churches, which I'm quite a fan of, these very cute, very different old wooden churches, which give a very particular feeling to the countryside. And that was something I was quite keen to explore. And as always, I was quite happy to find out stuff that surprised me as I went along, such as Slovakia is actually the world's biggest producer of cars per person, per head of population. It has four very big car plants and quite a small population.
Well, yeah, because don't they make the new Land Rover? Don't they make that in Slovakia nowadays?
They may well. There's a list on my blog somewhere of the four factories. I went past one of them, the Kia factory in
Kia. My brother has just bought, in fact, a Kia that was built in Slovakia. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I cycled past the factory, the very factory where it was built. So those kind of little surprises. In the back of my mind was always this feeling that Slovakia is about the same size as Yorkshire. It's about the same size population, about 5.5 million, and roughly similar GDP. So it felt like there was an equivalent. And also their folk hero is a kind of Robin Hood figure. And of course, Robin Hood came from Yorkshire, as we know. He was from Doncaster, from Barnsdale Forest.
Every hero came from Yorkshire, come on.
They always did. And they have an equivalent, a highwayman who robbed from the rich and gave to the poor. And he came from a place that I went through and I visited his hometown and saw his big statue erected by the Soviets. And Slovakia is a sort of fairly quiet, modest sort of place, but I found it very well set up for touring because every little village has a grocery store and a supermarket. There's plenty of little bars, just pleasant, quiet little village bars or town bars. Plenty of places to eat, plenty of cafes. The place that I did come and stuck was Easter, because I managed to be there over Easter weekend, and Slovakia being quite a strong Catholic country, everything was shut. And in the larger towns like Košice and Prešov, where I'd based myself for Easter, there were a few places open, a few restaurants. But on Easter Monday, I had nothing to eat except from petrol stations. So breakfast was a bag of crisps and some biscuits from a petrol station. Lunch was another bag of crisps and biscuits from a petrol station. And dinner was another bag of crisps and biscuits from a petrol station. And that wasn't a day of my best diet, I'm afraid.
That sounds delicious to me. I'm looking at the map here that, presumably I've never done Land's End to John O'Groats, but there are set routes that you can follow. I've never considered thinking, now I'm going to go from the western side of Slovakia to the eastern side of Slovakia. So how did you go about choosing the route that you would follow? Did you go, for example, Bratislava is very much on the border. Well, it is on the border between Slovakia and Austria. Did you go via Bratislava?
I didn't. I'd been to Bratislava before. When I do the end-to-ends, it's usually a kind of day-by-day thing. So some trips I've camped, but I wasn't camping on this one. I was just staying at inexpensive hotels and guest houses. So it was that touring model of each day I would look at the weather forecast and think, okay, I can probably get there tomorrow. That's about 55 miles. And I was doing it on a folding bike so that I could get there by Eurostar and overnight trains.
You were doing this on a, I didn't know on that. On a Brompton or?
It was on a Dayhon Speed TR, which is a folding touring bike. It's quite a bit bigger than a Brompton when it folds up, but it's just small enough to go on Eurostar. So that was quite a cheap way of getting across. I think I booked it 6 months in advance. Eurostar was like 30 euros. And then I got a night train from Amsterdam down to Vienna, which was another 30 euros. And the bike is sort of okay up to about 50 miles. Any more than that, and you start to notice it in your backside, and it's not quite as comfortable as a regular size bike for a long haul day, but it was certainly good enough for what I was doing. And there was no really big climbs. I suppose in a day, I wasn't ever doing more than about 600 meters of climb, and that was as much as it got. But the roads are quite well graded. There was a lot of very quiet roads, and there was quite a lot of cycle paths, as I say, where often I would go for 20 miles or 30 miles just on a cycle path, a well-paved cycle path.
As a country, would you say it's, I think I might unfortunately know the answer to this, is it a more cycle-friendly place than Britain?
Probably quite similar in terms of driver behavior. You often feel safer on the main roads because the main roads can have quite a wide shoulder. And so often, although it's a bit noisy and a bit hectic, you feel reasonably safe because you've effectively got a cycle lane that's the width almost of a carriageway that you can cycle along the side of the road. And the cycle provision within towns was often more continuous and more joined up than Britain. So it felt quite similar, often a bit better. The standard of the roads was about the same. There was a few bumpy roads here and there, but it was a fairly similar experience to being in Dumfries and Galloway, somewhere like that, in southern Scotland.
Interesting. I remember being in Dumfries and Galloway and being appalled by the state of the roads. I remember cycling through, I can't remember the name of the town on the west coast, and thinking, my God, this is dreadful. Because usually Scotland is a pretty good place to cycle. Mm. Yeah. You've picked a bad example there, Rob. But anyway. What were the highlights? I've actually been to Slovakia. I went with a friend a few years ago, in fact, two friends, and we went walking in the High Tatras. Mm. We flew into Bratislava, and then we caught the train up to the High Tatras, and it was Easter, and we were expecting to walk around the place in beautiful spring sunshine, and it was still 6 foot deep in snow when we got there. We then headed south to Košice, which I thought was a really interesting, beautiful place, and then returned on the train to Bratislava. So what were your highlights?
The highlights were Prešov and Košice, in many ways a kind of model of the small country from Eastern Europe that has embraced the European Union ideal. And just in terms of civilization, a sense of history, pleasant people, ease of access to things like shops and restaurants and places to stay. Not often spectacular scenery, but always pleasant. Not often spectacularly beautiful historic centres, but always pleasant. And just a nice, easygoing 2.5 week journey that gave me this feeling of satisfaction of having seen a mixture of big towns and small villages and car factories on the one hand, but these little historic wooden churches on the other. And at the end, of course, this rather sobering experience of getting to the Ukrainian border and thinking how bizarre it was that just a couple of kilometres further east was a country at war. Really, there was very little sense of any of that. Possibly one or two army vehicles that you saw buzzing around, but that could have just been normal. At a couple of places I stayed, there were some Ukrainian refugees, and that was quite sobering, talking to them, hearing their story, and that made you feel clearly enormously privileged to be in a part of the world where, you know, we're a lot more used to stability.
There's lots of comments being made about, you know, how close Ukraine is to Britain, but actually, you know, places like Slovakia, Hungary, Poland, they're actually on the border with Ukraine, and, you know, for them it's a real, yes, it's still in Europe, but for them it's the neighbours. And
well, also with the history of you know, many people who have seen a lot of changes within their lives, and you know, they must be very aware that situations can change.
Did you speak to anybody who referred to the situation in Ukraine at all?
No, the Slovakian conversations I had didn't particularly mention it, other than just in general terms. But like I say, it was a it sort of stopped you a bit short to actually talk to people who had to leave their families, leave half of their families behind, and for various reasons were in temporary exile. So, yes, there was quite a sense of unreality about it at times.
Just good, catching up actually on that thing about the Eurostar. That, did you see the report this week about Eurostar changing their rules regarding the transport of bikes?
Now I saw on their website. Yes, the through COVID, they have stopped taking bikes altogether, apart from folding bikes. And the old system, which I had used in the past, where you can book a bike on a train or possibly your train, possibly a different service, but you can book it on, that hasn't been in operation. But they started a new one, they say, or it will start mid-May. Now, how the new system will work exactly, I don't know. But I wanted to take my folding bike just to make sure that I would be okay.
Are you going to be able to rock up at St. Pancras with your touring bike with four panniers and wheel it onto the train at any time in the future, or is that just kind of not going to happen?
From what I remember on the website, if you book it 6 months in advance, it'll cost you £35. If you book it up to 2 months in advance or something, it's £45. And if you do it kind of the day before or as a walk-up, it'll be £55, which begins to be quite serious.
Now, the music. You've made your way back from Slovakia. How did you actually travel from Bratislava, presumably, back to...
Back from Nova Sedlica, so right on the eastern side of Slovakia, I took a train across Slovakia to Bratislava, then a train from Bratislava to Prague, where I spent a couple of days cycling around, and then a Flixbus, from Prague to Amsterdam. And I just had a day in Amsterdam, which I just spent cycling around. I had a few hours before my Eurostar train. And there was this wonderful feeling. You know what it's like when you turn up in Amsterdam or anywhere in the Netherlands, and just suddenly you're in this beautiful land of wide bike paths where they're continuous and you have priority at junctions, and cycling is just this delight. But of course, Amsterdam is pretty busy as well. And in the center of Amsterdam, around Amsterdam Central Station, it's just a tumult. These huge currents of cyclists whooshing one way or the other. And it's all really hectic. And if you don't signal properly or you get in the wrong place, you know, you'll get ticked off in Dutch by people as they go past. And it was just this bewildering tumult of activity. And that's what inspired the music over the last year or so. I've been writing various pieces of music, always inspired by places that I've cycled. And this one seemed to demand something quite fast and quite hectic. So I wrote a toccata for guitar, toccata being a fast piece with lots of repeated notes. And for me, it just tries to encapsulate that feeling of exhilaration, but also of slight bewilderment with things just going a bit too fast for you to take in sometimes.
Well, that's the music that we heard at the very beginning of the podcast, and we'll hopefully hear it at the end of the podcast, as long as you're happy for me to pay you no royalties whatsoever. It is a beautiful piece, I have to say, and I listened to it after a particularly tough day in the school where I work. And I thought, wow, this is just the antidote to teenage children. But anyway, if you're a teacher, listen to it, and it's fabulous. Now, I on the website, on cyclingeurope.org, I did reveal this week my decision to tweak ever so slightly my planned trip around the Baltic. So basically, my plan was to take the ferry from Hull to Rotterdam to the Hook of Holland and to turn left and head around the Baltic. But there was something about it, and I wrote about this on my website, saying I wasn't getting excited by the whole thing. So at the weekend, I decided to tweak the route slightly, and I thought, well, how about if I leave Hull and arrive in Rotterdam, and instead of turning left at the Hook of Holland, I turn right and I head into France. And instead of going around the Baltic, I basically head round France instead and end up in the Alps and head down the Rhine cycle route. And the more I thought about it, the more excited I was. And the more I thought, well, actually, these are all the routes that people have told me about over the past, you know, 10 years of cycling around Europe that I've never been on in their entirety, that here I have the opportunity of doing. These are things like the Avenue Verte to Paris. These are there's one called the Vélo Scénique, or the Vélo Scénique, as they call it in English, from Paris to Mont-Saint-Michel. The Vélo d'Issée, the Canal du Midi, the Canal de la Garonne, that featured on the podcast recently. The Eurovélo 17, the Rhône cycle route. And then, of course, the big one itself, the Rhine cycle route. Have you done any of those?
Only a couple of those, the Canal du Midi, and done a bit of the Rhône, and certainly done the coastline when you turn right from the Hook of Holland, but not a lot of them. It sounds fabulous. Are you doing your usual thing of staying at campsites?
Well, I think so, yeah. I mean, I can't afford to. You know, I'm not a Rob Ainsley or a Tim Moore. I can't afford to stay in luxury hotels everywhere where I stay. For me, it's just kind of rocking up and finding a campsite.
But how long are you going to be away?
Well, there's a question. Originally, it was going to be about 7 weeks, but it's too complicated. I'd love to explain, but it's complicated with my arrangements with the school where I work. But basically, I think it could be 2 months, from the beginning of July to the end of August. Mm-hmm. What do you reckon? I think it was around 5,500 kilometres. Is that feasible in 2 months?
That sounds about right. Is there going to be a book in this, or are you just doing
There is definitely 100% a book. Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I've already come up with a title. The title is A Wander Around Europe, in reference to the new bike.
Yes.
The new bike that was bought 3 years ago to go end to end in Japan, which never clearly happened.
Well, this is the first time it'll have been abroad, is it?
No. It's been to I took it down to Santander, yeah, to Porto.
Of course, yes, yeah, you did that one.
Ever since then, it's been poor wander. The Dutch bike has been restricted to cycling round Britain. But there's something about France which is, I mean, I'm a French teacher. You know, there are automatic boxes there to tick. But even if I wasn't a French teacher, I'm sure I would be drawn to France just because it's a bloody nice place to cycle around. I was watching Rick Stein last night on the TV on BBC Two, a repeat of one of his programmes around France. And I'm thinking, who cares about the rest of the world? I just want to kind of cycle and kind of spend my entire life in France, eating good food and drinking good wine and being on my bike. And am I naive there, or am I?
I think there's something just delightful about that day-to-day pleasure of cycling in France. That, yeah, of course, you get the range of scenery and beautiful castles and lovely historic squares and so on, but it's that totality of experience that, you know, even in the little villages, you stop at the bakery and just get your picnic lunch, and it just tastes really good. It's something about that quality of the experience all the time. And a lot of those fairly routine things that you do on a bike, just the cycling along, admiring the scenery, stopping, having something to eat and drink, it's all a very colourful and high quality experience. And it's just such a lovely place to go around day by day. And yeah, you can see why once you're there, you don't really want to go home. You're happy just to keep on cycling around.
My vision of Nirvana is having a nice bike ride, arriving at a camping municipal, you know, one of those campsites in France where basically you still pay, despite rampant inflation, €6, €7 to stay overnight. And that's if there's someone there to pay. Sometimes there isn't someone there to pay, so you basically get it for free. And then you head down to the local boulangerie, you buy a baguette, you buy some cheese, perhaps a bit of ham, a bottle of wine. You head back to the campsite. You put said cheese and ham in your baguette. You eat it. And I think genuinely, I'm not making this up, those are the points that I can't think of anything that I would rather do in my life than be on a campsite in France with a bike and my tent, eating a baguette with cheese and ham and a bit of mustard, perhaps, and a glass of wine.
And the thing is, you just sleep like a top and wake up feeling really good and really refreshed, yeah. and head out into the morning. And I'm usually quite an early riser, so, you know, I'm sometimes off at 7:30 or 8:00 or something. And that joy of setting off into the fresh morning and thinking that the whole day is yours, the whole day is there in front of you. And it's something about that repeatability of it. It just doesn't, the novelty never wears off. It's just delightful day after day.
Mm. Yeah.
I think you've made a decent decision, basically.
Yeah. I mean, there is much about the Baltic, especially the Baltic states, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, that still attracts me. But I think it was those long stretches in potentially Finland and Sweden where I thought, would I be happier cycling for a long distance and then eating a hardened cake in Stockholm? Or would I be happier cycling a long distance in France and then getting somewhere and sitting there without a care in the world, eating a baguette with cheese and a bottle of wine? And
Yes, having spent sort of €6 on the lot or something.
Yes, yeah, absolutely, yeah, yeah. Anyway, your end-to-ends, they haven't hopefully ended in Slovakia. Where is the next one? I mean, there are 200 countries in the world, so you've got a lot to go at, but... How about North Macedonia? I'm looking at the map here. North Macedonia, Moldova, Latvia. I can't see any more.
Well, I can tell you.
Belgium or the Netherlands?
Well, I'm actually off to Belgium tomorrow. Funny you should mention that. I'm on a very early train and going down on the ferry with my normal touring bike to Dunkirk. And I'll then cycle from De Panne, which is the westernmost settlement in Belgium, across to Krewinkel, which is in the German-speaking part of Belgium, right over in the east. So the theme of the trip is going to be the three Belgiums, the Flemish Belgium, which has places like Bruges and Ghent and half of Brussels, and then the French part of Belgium, which is largely south of Brussels, through places like Namur and Liège, and then finishing in the German part of the country right over in the east, in places like Sankt-Vith. So very much the theme of the trip is these three different countries, which often tend to sort of behave a bit independently of each other. And so I'm looking forward to that. Obviously another place where you get lots of culture, like chips, chocolate and beer. So I'll be enjoying that.
Yeah, no, that sounds like a good plan. Why do you not wait until the summer?
I don't know. I tend to just cycle all the way through the year. So I'll be going somewhere else in summer, I'm sure. I've got the King Alfred's Way planned for June and various other things. But yeah, this is just a week-long trip, and I will be spending some of it indoors in restaurants and perhaps the old bistro. Mm.
And, I mean, obviously you write for the cycle magazines and your material is available widely. Are you going to be writing about these places for various magazines, various publications?
Yeah, I hope so. It all gets used for something eventually, but I'll certainly be blogging about it on my website at e2e.bike. And that'll be going up shortly after I finish the trip.
Okay, well, brilliant. Now, I have just received a notification from Zoom saying we've got 10 minutes to go, so we need to draw this to a close. But if there were the definitive end-to-end, what would it be and where would it be?
It would be New Zealand. I have been to New Zealand and did some cycling here and there, but I'd love to go back and do the end-to-end, which is Cape Reinga to Bluff, from the north to the south. And there's a fairly standard way of doing it, which is bike packing, a lot of off-road trails. It's about 3,000 kilometres. It's a long way. It's a good month of long days, but it's a fantastic experience. I know from the bit of cycling I've done in New Zealand, you get this fantastic range of landscapes, everything from tropical forests to volcanoes to glaciers to fjords. You get some absolutely awesome mountainous landscapes, some super friendly people, a very inviting and easygoing outdoors culture with lots of places to stay, the hostels and the campsites. And it's a place that's really set up for that kind of bikepacking experience. So that'll be the one. So good luck with the lottery. And, you know, if your number comes up, you've got my phone number.
Well, somebody won the £184 million, didn't they, today on the Euro Millions. It wasn't me, alas.
I know. But, and you think, the bike tours, I could do with that. And still have £183.5 million left over. Yeah.
Yeah, and the rest. Right, okay, brilliant. Okay, well, thank you, Rob. Now, we're going to finish this podcast, which I hopefully am not going to edit in any way, shape or form. I'm just going to stick it out there. If people don't like it and they think it's kind of, well, that was just two people talking nonsense, well, hey-ho, so much for it. We're nearly at number 50. Next episode is going to be number 50 of the Cycling Europe podcast. So I kind of feel almost that I've got to do something special for it, but I have no idea what that's going to be. But thank you for indulging me on my unplanned discovery of the end to ends of Europe and beyond. And we're going to finish with your inspired, beautiful piece of music. But thank you, Rob, for indulging me in this impromptu episode of the Cycling Europe podcast. Hopefully we'll see you again in the future.
I hope so. Great to talk to you. And I'm really looking forward to reading about your trip in Europe, in France, because it's a fabulous part of the world. And I look forward to seeing your blog posts, your pictures, and the book when that comes out.
Yeah. You might have to wait until 2020. Oh, good question. 23, 24. But thank you, Rob, for your ongoing commitment to the cycle touring cause. You're a hero of cycle tourists, and thank you for that. And here is Rob's
Toccata for guitar, Amsterdam Central, about a 7-minute fast piece for guitar.
There you go. That says it far better than I ever could. Thank you, Rob. I shall see you next episode for the Cycling Europe podcast. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Thanks. Bye.
Thank you.